This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick at the studios of NPR West.
And from San Diego at Qualcomm Stadium, the Wildfire Evacuation Center, I'm Madeline Brand. Coming up the day before President Bush gets here, he sends Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff to assess the worst national disaster since Katrina. We ask what he thinks so far.
And we'll talk with a pilot about the perils of dive bombing fires. And when she got back to her airbase, it looked like that was about to burn too. First, though, officials in San Diego today say they have estimated damages from the fire so far at more than $1 billion. Madeline, you drove down to San Diego yesterday. What did you see?
Alex, driving around here, I feel like I'm in a Mad Max movie. It has that post-apocalyptic feel. The sky is browny orange. It smells like 100 campfires. Two armed National Guard troops let me through a barricade, and I drive down a really quiet road. I pull over when I see three people watering the ground near their home. Tufts of smoke are rising up from the earth. The guys have their shirts off. They're dirty and tired looking.
What's your name?
Park Frankel.
And this is your property here?
Yes.
Can you describe it?
Well, it's blackened, it's charred, and the fire department did an amazing job of saving not only our house, but many of the others in the neighborhood. Several of our neighbors' houses have been lost. I think the total is seven on the street. So seven houses are gone. We've had all sorts of fun wrestling with animals. Just got some goats pinned into a pen over here. It's been an interesting day.
I drive further into the neighborhood. There are about a dozen houses here. Most are worth millions of dollars. One house is in the early stages of construction. Another is an old 1950s-era ranch house, bright yellow.
It is really quiet here in this neighborhood. Most of the residents have evacuated. The wind is just a breeze now. It has calmed down considerably from earlier in the day and from yesterday. You can just hear a few helicopters overhead and some National Guard and police cars going by on the main road. Earlier, I met Joe Mullins, who returned to his house to help put out some hot spots in the neighborhood. He hasn't slept in a day or two. His eyes are red-rimmed from lack of sleep, the smoke, and he says from breaking down and crying after visiting some friends down the road here who lost everything.
It's been a rough couple days. It's been pretty wild. I just went over to my neighbor's and it was burnt to the ground. And I feel terrible, you know. It's just so bad. But a lot of good things happened too. My neighbor saved my house and his own, and I saved this house here. You know, it's pretty wild. If you want to see some, you can. It's worth taking a look at. But
yeah, I'd love to see it.
All right.
I'm walking on what used to be this person's house. This is just ash and the remnants of tiles and cement. That's it.
Joe Mullins and his neighbor, Scott Jacobs, are the only homeowners here. Their houses are fine. They're trying to put out flames that are flaring up around their neighbors' homes.
We've been using buckets from the pool to try to keep it down.
You've been bailing with buckets?
Yeah, from the pool.
Wow.
Because a living hiding water came through and shut off most of the water to everybody's homes. And there's these little, like, locks on them. So if you came out here and you could save that house, you can't because you can't get the water on.
And the funny thing is, you know, I'm wearing flip-flops, but bottom of my shoes burned up yesterday. And this way, the good thing on this is you can feel it, and you can just put water on the... I just put water on my shoes if it gets too hot.
Scott calls him over. Smoke is rising near a grove of eucalyptus trees down the street. Joe turns on a hose, and miraculously, water comes out. He scrambles down a little hill in his flip-flops to attack the crackling embers. Joe, why are you haven't slept in a day or two. Why are you putting all this effort into saving someone else's house?
Well, it's just the right thing to do, isn't it? I mean, you know, I hope somebody did it for me too, but it's just the right thing to do. Whether, even if you lose your house, you still got to try to...
I leave Joe and Scott as the sun is setting. Two men trying to save their neighborhood.
So listening to that, Madeline, here's the question that occurs. Why do some of the houses in the same neighborhood, some burn and others don't?
Well, Alex, Scott had an explanation. He said a couple of years ago, the fire department came by and told them how much brush to clear from around their homes and which plants to get rid of. And he said he did that, but his neighbors all around him didn't. And, you know, there were palm trees draped over the roof of one house. All those houses, Scott said, burned to the ground. And it just shows that it only takes a spark and really not very much time at all for these houses to go.
So, and now to someone who's used to dealing with these scary situations. I spoke earlier with an air tanker pilot, Lynn McGrew. She's flying for CAL FIRE. That's the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. Here's what she said about seeing these fires from the air.
You know, they're so devastating, and this one is a lot worse than the Cedar Fire. In fact,
that was the one 4 years ago that was so terrible.
That's correct. But see, that seemed to just go in a sheet, like a big flat front line, where this fire basically started in one origin, and it split into about three different heads. It's burning what we call dirty. In other words, you get a lot of spots. You get a lot of outbreaks all over the place, very unpredictable. And with the high winds and all of the spotting going on, it's almost impossible to be everywhere that you need to be in order to be able to do any good.
Tell me, what kind of a plane do you fly, and what do you do? What happens during the day?
I fly the Grumman S2T Tracker out of Ramona.
And that's an observation plane?
No, it's not. I fly the tanker and actually do the drops on the fire.
Oh, you do?
Right. The OV-10 is the one that basically is the first one to go out on scene. He's basically responsible for checking visibility, turbulence, if we're going to be effective with our drops. And then he calls back and orders the aircraft that he wants or needs.
So the plane you're flying is a tanker. How big a plane is this?
Basically, it used to have five people on it when it was used in military status. Now it's just a single pilot operation. It carries about 1,200 gallons of retardant. And it weighs 29,000 pounds. If you were flying a commuter aircraft, it would be larger than that.
So, and you say you're a single pilot. Is there anyone else on board with you?
No, huh?
And so you take off and you fly to where you're supposed to drop this stuff, and then what do you do? How low do you try to get?
Basically, our optimum drop altitude is 150 feet. That's where the retardant does the most good. Anything lower, and you could do a lot of damage to persons or property if there happens to be somebody on the ground. We do try to make sure that everybody is out of the way.
Isn't it something to be trying to get down that low, 150 feet, with the kinds of winds that you're dealing with out there?
And see, that's the problem. Monday morning, winds, I think, were pretty much at their peak. And not only do we have the winds and the terrain that cause a lot of the turbulence, but you've got the heat from the fire that creates its own heat and its own direction of turbulence.
Isn't that pretty tricky?
Basically, every year we go through training, and everything's got to be planned out decently so we know how we're going to go in, and we've got our emergency exit routes so that we know that once we get rid of the load of retardant, we're able to go ahead and get out clean and safely. Generally, when we work the fire, we always have the ATGS, the air attack aircraft, above us, and he's keeping an eye on us. We only go in one at a time to do our drops, and once we're clear, and we call clear and empty, then he'll bring the next aircraft in.
You know, I keep hearing that these fires are 10% contained. What does that mean, 10% contained?
They don't like to say that we've got a total containment on a fire until we have a line around it. Like on a normal fire, we do our drops, our retardant drops, and they'll go in and they do water drops to cool everything down that's inside the black area. And then normal ground crews, they put bulldozers on it to make this big buffer zone or area around it to make sure that it's contained. And that's where your 5% or 10% containment, that's where what that means.
Now, you're coughing. I wonder if there's smoke around where you are.
No, I'm not. Yesterday, I think I was calling it kennel cough because we had so much soot and stuff in the air up there. Most of us had to wear goggles going to and from the aircraft, and of course the smoke and stuff in the air was just horrible.
And then you said you're flying out of the Ramona Air Base that's near San Diego. That almost caught fire yesterday, right?
Yes, it did. We had fires just on the north side, basically.
Did you land with a fire going on near the airbase?
Yeah, but we had dozers, and the smoke was allowing us to get in and get out, and the south side of the airport was still, you know, good visibility, and the winds were favorable enough that we were able to get out and go ahead and do some good.
Well, I guess if you dive bomb fires for a living, landing in smoke wouldn't seem like that much anxiety.
Well, if the visibility is too bad, you know, you can't risk getting hurt or having anybody else hurt by bad judgment.
Lynn, you have today off. You expecting to fly again tomorrow?
I'll be there before it gets daylight. In fact, I stayed up there both evenings because there are no hotels.
Lynn McGrew, pilot for CAL FIRE. Thanks so much and good luck.
Yep, we all need it.